I'm going to have to read these books now.
So many books.
So many books.
So many books.
They took her germs.
They took her germs. Take her too.
Oh, boy.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hello and welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. My name is Casey, and I've had myself surgically removed, and I am an anomaly.
My name is Sue, and I'm just sick and tired of being a one-of-a-kind freak, that's all. And I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. We hope you enjoyed your month off from our beautiful voices.
Oh, boy. Don't tempt them. We'll have an uprising.
You mean like in Les Miserables?
Yes. Well, not at all.
No, not at all.
I don't even have any bread.
That was a failed uprising anyway.
Oh, boy.
I'm just saying, when almost all of them die, not really successful. Okay, since it has been a while since we have recorded a new episode, what have we been up to? Sue, why didn't you start us off?
Oh, I don't know what I've been up to.
Well, you need to figure it out.
I have been getting very behind on TV. Still, I'm very behind on TV. I finally finished the Civil War book, They Fight Like Demons. I read The Wizard of Earthsea, or A Wizard of Earthsea is what it's actually called, by Ursula K. Le Guin. And The Android's Dream by John Scalzi, and Old Man's War by John Scalzi. Scalzi is quickly becoming one of my favorite authors, in case people haven't noticed. And, of course, I read the Jim Henson biography.
And how was that?
I cried a lot.
Of course you did.
Cried
a lot. Because you're human.
Yes. And I am currently reading... I don't know if you can call it reading, perusing two books on with Jim Henson's doodles and pictures of the creatures. One is an older book called Jim Henson's Designs and Doodles, and the other is Imagination Illustrated, which is more recent. And I am reading a biography of Nikola Tesla, because apparently I need to read a lot of, I don't know, nonfiction. But nonfiction takes me longer, and that is why I am 8 books behind on my Goodreads goal.
Whereas I am 12 books ahead. Yeah. And since I've been reading so much within the last month or so, I'm just going to cover the highlights. I just finished Howl's Moving Castle by Diana Wynne Jones. That's the book that is the inspiration for Hayao Miyazaki's Howl's Moving Castle. Different, but, you know, you get the picture. I also read a great book about this so-called new golden age of television called Difficult Men, which focuses on the male protagonists, where they don't necessarily have to be likable, like The Sopranos and Breaking Bad. Stiff by Mary Roach, which is about human cadavers. The graphic novel Mouse by Art Spiegelman. I finally finished A Natural History of Dragons, and I also restarted Daughter of the Forest, which I think I had to put down last year. I think I have this thing about reading in a certain format where I prefer reading fantasy novels in hardback because it actually feels like a text rather than reading it in a mass market paperback, which is like 1,000 pages long with like really, really tiny text. So, oh, and also the Buffy the Vampire Slayer omnibus.
Omnibus.
Omnibus, Volume 1.
What was that name of that TV book?
Difficult Men by Brett Martin.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. I think it could have been better, but but because of me reading that book, it recommended other books about television revolution, which one of them actually also includes the topics of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Battlestar Galactica. I can't tell you which one that is off the top of my head right now, but I'm going to try to find that one soon because it sounds great.
That's the problem with those books. They lead you to so many more books.
That's the problem with Goodreads. Because the to-read list just keeps getting longer and longer and longer.
It really, really does.
Otherwise, my life is just crazy right now. I've been writing up a storm, working on a few projects of my own that I might restart the blog again that I have, as well as the one on Anomaly Podcast. And we're moving, so that idea might have to wait until that is done. Basically, we're moving into some temporary housing, and then Kevin and I are moving to Dallas. So, the Dallas area, because he's going to law school.
Yay.
Yay!
But boo Dallas.
Yeah, I don't
There's
really like
good
Dallas.
Barbecue, right, though?
There's good barbecue everywhere in Texas. Have you even been here?
No. I have been to an airport in Texas.
If you're going to come to Texas, I would recommend probably coming to Austin for one of the events. Like, South, maybe not South by. Actually, those events are crazy. But come, like, during Austin Comic Con or something like that. It's fun!
It's hot and dry in Texas.
Well, come during the winter. There, your problem is solved.
Okay, fine.
Next song. And running. I've been doing lots of running, just like you've been doing lots of running.
Yes. Today, in fact.
How many miles did you do again?
11.
Yeah, I just did 5.
And then I went to Nathan's and had a chili cheese dog and cheese fries.
That sounds so good.
It totally evens out, right?
Sure. Your metabolism is like in the thousands now, so you're fine.
Transition.
Yeah, so we've been planning a Muppets in Space, you know, sci-fi fantasy topic for a long time, but it hasn't been until now that we've finally decided to tackle it.
Before you, like, said Muppets in Space in passing, I don't think we even mentioned the name of the episode.
Yes, the episode is entitled Muppets in Space.
Good job.
Yay! I did it! I'm so good at stating the obvious!
Now that's what it's really called. Muppets in Space!
Yay!
Oh, boy. So, because it's called Muppets in Space, there's a thing I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Continue.
So, the title of this episode was intended to be catchy and get people to download it who don't normally listen to us. We are not talking solely about the Muppets, nor are we talking solely about space-based science fiction. Not all puppets are Muppets, not even all Jim Henson-style puppets are Muppets, nor are all Jim Henson creatures Muppets. Although Jim himself referred to his creations in two categories, Muppets, including the Sesame Street characters, and creatures, like the puppets used in Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, as it stands right now, in 2014, the Muppets are the set of characters that are owned by the Walt Disney Company, specifically Kermit, Gonzo, Piggy, Fozzie, and that whole gang. Nothing else is a Muppet. The Sesame Street characters are owned by Sesame Workshop, which used to be the children's television network, and are independent of the Jim Henson Company. The Jim Henson Company is still producing things, or did produce things, like Farscape or Dinosaur Train or The Fraggles are still a Jim Henson property, but they are all legally separate and distinct entities. The end.
What she said. I always get frustrated when people call certain puppets that are not really, that are not even remotely related to Jim Henson Muppets.
Yeah.
I can kind of forgive people for calling the creatures Muppets. That's okay. It's like, you're not really a big nerd about this, so I could probably forgive it. But calling Yoda a Muppet is just not correct.
No. A Skeksis is not a Muppet. Fraggle is not a Muppet.
Nope.
A Fiery is not a Muppet.
Nope.
Pilot and Rigel are not Muppets.
Nope.
Sweetums is a Muppet.
Sweetums is a Muppet.
Clearly, we have strong feelings about this.
We have the Jim Henson biography. So, we must be experts about this.
I don't know if I'd call myself an expert, but I would certainly probably be more knowledgeable than the average person on the street about Jim Henson-related things.
Yeah. I'm just saying, if you've watched the Jim Henson Memorial more than twice, you might be a Jim Henson fan.
I've gotten to the point where I can make it all the way through Being Green until Big Bird says thank you, Kermit. Then I just lose it. I'm done.
God. So.
I just broke the podcast because now we're both going to cry.
Okay. So. We asked this question before in one of our Moment of Who's. What is the difference between puppetry and practical effects or a guy in a rubber suit? Where are all of these things separated?
I don't know.
This doesn't have to be super in-depth. We've had a month. We've had quite the month. I'm still having that month where I am moving, so it's okay if we don't sound that intelligent.
I don't know. I feel like, and it might just be my nostalgia towards puppetry, but that a puppet does eventually embody a character. You know, Kermit is a puppet, and the Skeksis are puppets, and Yoda is a puppet. And Pilot and Rigel are puppets, and they are characters, and for the most part, protagonists. Well, all of the ones I mentioned are protagonists, and have deeper thoughts and feelings and character motivations. Even Audrey too, I would call a character.
And I very much agree with you, because for one thing, drives the plot forward. For another thing, with puppetry, there's more of an emphasis on getting the lip sync right and bringing more life to a character. Like with practical effects, there can be some life to it, but there's not necessarily a personality or a character to it.
Right. I would probably put guys in rubber suits, like old school Godzilla and stuff, in the same category as practical effects, which you generally think of as like the shark in Jaws, which is basically still a puppet, but it's not, you know, you don't think of it as puppetry.
Right. You know, if it's just a monster for the sake of being a monster, that's not puppetry. It's special effects.
Yeah.
That's all it really is. Whereas puppetry actually requires puppeteers and you know, puppeteers are actors.
Yeah. Puppet performers.
Have you seen the... It's on YouTube. I don't know if they've taken it down or not, but Frank Oz and Jim Henson had a talk at the Puppeteers of America conference, and I think the video was actually taken a couple of months before Jim died. And it's really fascinating, and they have such a lot of fun with each other, and they talk about puppetry and when they put the puppets on their arms, like Cookie Monster and Kermit and Animal, they talk about the characters of all of them. And even if it's a two-dimensional character like Animal, you still kind of bring life to it. I think they say at one point, you know, it doesn't... Voices aren't a big thing in puppetry. As long as you get the character down, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just bring it to life in its personality. Don't worry about the fact that Cookie Monster sounds a lot like Animal, or that Ernie sounds a lot like Kermit. Things
Stop
like that.
Stop destroying the illusion, Casey.
Let's talk about the memorial again. My name is Debbie Downer. I'm here to poop on your party. Okay. So, obviously the most famous of the sci-fi puppets would be Yoda. Based on what was written about him in the Jim Henson biography, it was really hard to manage the Yoda puppet.
Yeah, with the cables, it was apparently very, very heavy for Frank Oz.
I'm trying to think of other famous sci-fi puppets as well. Rigel is really famous amongst the geek community. Alf.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Pilot from Farscape as well.
And Pilot. Pilot's a great puppet.
Mm-hmm.
The Thunderbirds, which are marionettes. I think that's the one time I could think of that marionettes made a big impact as puppetry. Mm-hmm. Apart from, you know, Team America by Matt Stone and Trey Parker. And, you know, MST3K. But for the most part, it seems like a lot of the focus for puppetry goes to fantasy movies. And I guess that's because that's where you see, you know, more creative characters, I guess. A lot of the aliens I see in films and TV are very humanoid. I mean, look at Star Trek, look at Doctor Who. So I'm wondering why there's a lack of puppetry in sci-fi as opposed to fantasy.
I think that might have something to do really with Jim Henson, because when the Muppets got so popular in the 70s, everyone started copying him. So if you ask the average person to describe a puppet, they're going to tell you Kermit the Frog or Miss Piggy or Fozzie Bear. Mm-hmm. And I think there's this idea that puppets can't look real. They all sort of have this, like, felt pilling and everything. And I just think that fantasy might be a little more open to that, to the whimsy.
Mm-hmm.
Because puppets are really often associated with the whimsical. And sci-fi tends to be not so whimsical most of the time, but it take itself very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, even though it's clearly fantastical, that science fiction creators like to have to bring as much realism as possible. They want it to look like it's something that could actually exist and live and breathe, whereas maybe sometimes fantasy is not as concerned with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm also thinking that maybe it has something to do with budget as well, because it's probably cheaper to hire makeup artists, and this was brought up in another documentary that I watched called The Nightmare Factory, which covers Greg Nicotero's company for special effects and practical effects, and he's done some work in puppetry, too. too, and they did that argument about computers versus special effects, you know, done by hand and, you know, puppetry. And it's kind of a budgetary thing too, because it could be just a couple of guys in one room adding stuff to a green screen, whereas with special effects and whatnot, you know, done on set, you know, if a take doesn't work, they have to reset everything. You know, it's very frustrating to think of that as well. I also think about the creativity that came with Farscape. Even though I didn't grow up with Star Trek and Star Wars, when I first started watching Farscape, I realized that it was giving me one of the things that I didn't get from those shows and movies, which was actual aliens. Hmm. Because Rigel is not a humanoid at all. He's just this little squat blurb of green and mustache. And there's one episode where it's like this weird doctor thing, and he has like little leg haunches, and you know, they don't look human at all. They don't have the human arms and legs and limbs attached. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I have been wanting to see non-humanoid aliens in Star Trek for a long time. And they finally sort of did it in Enterprise with some of the Zindi.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, of course, the ones that they had most of the time in the conference rooms or whatever were humanoid. But they had the, like, sea creature Zindi that you saw every now and then. Of course, it was done with special effects. And they had an insectoid one, too, I think. And the other one that would have been difficult to do a makeup for, I think they said, was extinct. But, yeah, it's interesting how, as computers get better and faster, etc., the computer-based special effects become cheaper and cheaper, but actually making puppets or practical effects is starting to become more expensive than the computer effects.
Yeah. And the thing with the computer effects is that they don't really look that real.
Unless they're the really expensive ones. I don't think they do.
Well, like, even with the really expensive ones, you look at it, and it might be because we're spoiled with it now. We see it so often that we go, oh, that's not too bad for CGI.
Fair point.
Whereas I think you take more joy seeing something that someone has built and go, oh my God, how many man hours did it take to make this thing? And mind you, as long as it has some sort of character to it, it doesn't matter if it looks like Alf. It just seems like sometimes that even computer-generated characters in sci-fi films look so fake, and you can't really connect with the fear or the compassion that you're supposed to have
Jar Jar Binks.
For that being. Yes! I even think it would be, like, I personally think it would be fun to see more puppets in sci-fi, even if it's just like Pigs in Space. Let's just have a Pigs in Space TV series.
Okay.
Can we?
Yes.
Yes.
I will greenlight it.
Yes, let's do it.
On the Sue's Brain Network.
Even if it's just like a web series done by the Disney Company, it would be fun. Pigs in Space! That's the first time I ever experienced anything sci-fi with the Muppets.
Wow.
It's like, why are there pigs in space? Okay, I'll accept it. Oh, they're funny, too! Puns everywhere!
Oh, man.
Maybe that's why I'm so hard on puns. Once you get it from the Muppet Show, you're just kind of like, everyone else, I'm done. I can't with your puns. The Muppets did it so much better.
And then Muppet Babies, I think, did both Star Wars and Star Trek parodies.
Yeah. I think I remember remember those. Have you seen the Muppet Show episode that was the Star Wars crossover?
Of course I have.
That's a brilliant episode.
Do you really have to even ask me a question that begins with, have you seen the Muppet Show episode?
I guess I'm just doing it for the sake of the listening audience. But it was fun to see that mix of Muppet puppetry and then the droids in R2-D2.
And that episode is in season 4 of The Muppet Show. And the thought for a long time was that there were licensing things holding it up because holding up the release of a DVD set because of Lucasfilm and Disney and the Jim Henson Company and who owned what and when. And now that Disney owns Muppets and Star Wars, I don't understand why I don't have a season 4 DVD set.
Agreed.
That was my biggest reaction to the acquisition of Lucasfilm. I was like, can I have season 4 of the Muppet Show now?
Same here. I want it so bad. Yeah, why was Gonzo Darth Vader in that episode? That didn't seem very fair.
Because the silhouette was hilarious.
That's true.
That's why.
And I guess while we're on the topic of Muppets, I have to say that I'm sad that one of their forays into sci-fi was Muppets in Space.
It was called Muppets from Space.
Muppets from Space. I'm sorry.
Our episode is Muppets in Space. Yeah.
Sorry, I got my prepositions wrong.
That movie was disappointing.
Disappointing doesn't even cover it. It made me so sad. I took joy in the fact that Gonzo was just called to whatever for years. That I didn't really buy the fact that he was an alien.
Well, the thing that sort of bothered me about it was that Gonzo was always like, I'm unique, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly he's I don't want to be alone anymore. Like, you're not alone. You have all these crazy weirdo friends. And I don't know. It bothered me.
I don't know either. They could have done something so much more with the actual Muppet characters in a sci-fi scenario. They could have actually done Pigs in Space, a movie. That would have been so great.
I'm not sure they could have sustained the Pigs in Space thing for an hour and a half.
Well, not the actual pigs in space, but having the Muppet crew with the pigs in space. Also, back to talking a little bit about Doctor Who. Because Muppets, Doctor Who, and Disney, that's how we function.
Yes, it is.
It's fun going back to the older episodes for your moment of Who. It's such a fun miniseries to do. But seeing the guys in the rubber suits as opposed to actual puppeteers who don't make a lot of money anyway. You could hire puppeteers. It's not hard. And not seeing any puppeteers on current Who as well. It's just so disappointing, especially since that show in and of itself is so whimsical, which is a point you brought up earlier, which is why, you know, people accept fantasy puppetry as opposed to sci-fi puppetry. Why not have them in Doctor Who, which is considered more of a kid's show anyway? And in a way, the Daleks that you see in season 1 are more practical effects than puppet. Does that make sense? I'm just talking.
It does make sense. I think Doctor Who is a gray area in a lot of ways because, yeah, there's some time travel and some space travel, but it's more of a fairy tale, I think, than anything else. And the characters, the Cybermen are guys in suits, but they're not puppets. Big Bird is a guy in a suit. Big Bird is a puppet. You know, I can't, it's hard. And Doctor Who certainly has, we've seen a lot more non-humanoid aliens on Doctor Who, especially in New Who, than we have in anything else I can really remember other than Farscape. But they're either fat suits or weird makeup or digital effects. They're not puppets.
Right. There's just so much creativity that could go in that show that I'm missing. I guess they focus on humanoid characters as well because we could relate to them more as human beings if they look a little more like us. But really, I understand it's more of a budgetary issue.
That, and I think special effects makeup has come so far.
Mm-hmm.
That things that used to be guys in suits can now be prosthetic makeups.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I need you to talk me through one of the things you listed on our notes, which is sci-fi janitors and space janitors? What?
The sci-fi janitors are Bob and Carl. They are puppets. And they were created by Bo Brown, who is now the head of the puppetry track at Dragon Con. And they're hilarious. They made little sketches to play while people were filing into the rooms for panels and waiting for things to start. And they're just these... The tagline is, you know, who cleans up the con after all the people have gone home or something. And they're just, it's them sweeping, and then they're, you know, making fun of Batman or something. They're great short little videos, and they've become so popular that they're Bob and Carl, quote-unquote, held a puppet slam at Dragon Con. It is now, I believe, the biggest puppet slam on the East Coast, if not in the United States, which is insane. And, yeah, they're amazing. And they've sort of branched out to other cons as well. The Space Janitors are a show on Geek and Sundry, but I think it's actually live action. I may have written it down by mistake.
Hmm. Interesting. I think I've seen one episode of Space Janitors, but I'm more interested, I guess when it comes to YouTube viewing, I'm more interested in vlogs and tabletop and, you know, TED Talks and things like that as opposed to scripted television, but it's, you know, it's something I'm open to, for sure. I mean, there's a guild-shaped hole in my heart, and I could probably fill it with a few things.
There's certainly not enough Mule's Puppet Dreams.
There is not enough Mule's Puppet Dreams. Oh my gosh, that was so good. That was pun-filled as well,
yep.
And also very dirty.
Yes.
My favorite one was the last one where it was basically a Bollywood number with a cow, and Neil has fallen asleep next to his partner David, and he wakes up and he goes, "I'm in love with a cow." And David was eating while this happened, and he just pushes his bowl away and crosses his arms like, "You're." And you know what I just realized while we're talking about this? When puppets do appear in sci-fi, it's in a more comedy-based show.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the same perception of, like, whimsical versus serious. It's that people, even though there are puppeteers fighting against it, people still think of puppets as children's entertainment.
Which, if they're done right, they're not children's entertainment at all. And I think even Brian Henson is trying to prove that. I think he's been touring with an improv group.
Yeah,
with
Henson Alternative has a comedy show called Puppet Up. And it's an improv comedy show with puppets. And it is not child friendly. I'll just leave it at that.
I've been meaning to go to one of their shows, but I guess since he's been working on Creature Shop, I'm going to have to wait. Some of the most famous sci-fi puppets are the crew from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Like, in the geek realm, yes. If you mention Tom Servo and Crow, people get really excited, and they're just puppets built from props, basically.
Yeah.
Like, really bizarre things. But the thing is that they brought a character to them because comedy requires character. It really, really does. Whereas I think it can get away with the man in a rubber suit with action sci-fi and more serious sci-fi. It makes me sad that not a lot of people trust, like, even with Yoda, he eventually transitioned over into a computer animated character. And I get that Frank Oz was getting older and, you know, he wouldn't be able to commit to as much time doing the puppetry and also his directing career. Mm-hmm. And also, they wanted the awesome Yoda fight, which was the only good part of Attack of the Clones. But it makes me sad that Yoda isn't a puppet anymore.
I mean, in some ways, you can't really blame them if it's more cost effective and it allows for them to do visually with a character something they couldn't have done if it were a puppet.
Right.
But, I mean, we've said it a million times before. It is sad to me that everything is becoming CGI.
And it's so hard for an actor to react to something that isn't there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to pretend you're a child in your room again and you're pretending that your toys are the evil characters, but it's a completely different thing when you have an actual creature that you can focus your energies on. I think people underestimate how much power there is in puppetry, because when Rigel comes to life, people are reacting to how disgusting he is, because they can see how disgusting of a creature he is. Or they are able to react to Alf and him wanting to eat the cat.
Yeah, the interesting thing that kept coming up in the Henson biography was that guest stars that would come in for the Muppet Show would always remark on how as soon as, you know, Kermit went on Jim's arm, they were talking to Kermit. They weren't talking to Jim, even though Jim was standing right there and they could see him.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to Kermit, they were having a conversation with this green, filthy frog.
Yeah. It's even been brought up recently with behind-the-scenes footage for Muppets Most Wanted, which I sadly haven't seen yet, but continuing. Tom Hiddleston said that the one time he stalled a take was because he heard the voice of Kermit the Frog, and he went, oh, hold on, that was Kermit the Frog. Can we just take a moment? That was amazing. And on Jimmy Kimmel, Ricky Gervais was talking about how he was talking with Kermit's evil doppelganger, Constantine.
Kermit.
Yes. And he would just talk to Constantine, not mm-hmm. the puppeteer, Constantine. And he would be like, what'd you have for lunch today? And Constantine would go, I had the chicken. And everyone on set would look at Ricky Gervais like he's crazy, saying, you know, that's a puppet, right? But the thing is that when you're interacting with characters, you can't help but be drawn into that and talk to them.
There like was people. One story, too, of they said that when the Muppets regularly did spots on Late Night or The Tonight Show, yeah, that mm-hmm. the guys would hold up cue cards for Rolf. It's great.
That's one of my favorite stories. You know, going back, I should say that there is a place for computer animation. Jim Henson was actually all about computer animation. He thought that was one of the next big things that could add to puppetry. You know, he had the computer animated owl at the beginning of Labyrinth. But he wanted to blend those two together. He was still very dedicated to puppetry.
And the Jim Henson Company has. This is the coolest thing. Mm-hmm. Their digital puppetry, which they use for Sid the Science Kid, which I think airs on PBS.
I've seen behind-the-scenes footage for that. It's so cool!
It's so cool. They have, like, sensors on the actor, and they have the character and how it moves all, like, programmed into the computer. So they do motion capture puppetry. So the actor is doing all of these things, and then, like, a couple seconds later, the character is doing them on the computer screen.
Seriously, how far has technology come, and how much further it could go for puppeteers?
It's so
this
cool.
is so exciting. It's so awesome. And they were able to blend animatronic suits and computer animation for Where the Wild Things Are. Mm-hmm. So they were actually there, but to help with the details that comes with that come with lip movements and eyes blinking and things like that. It's beautiful to watch. So I'm just saying there needs to be more faith in puppeteers and animatronics, because it just rounds everything out so well, and it doesn't just look like something was animated and an actor didn't have to really push his imagination while standing on a green screen. Yeah. And I will say that in show notes, I'm going to include YouTube videos about the makings of the Farscape puppets, about the behind the scenes for the Labyrinth puppets, maybe one of the screen tests for the Skeksis from Dark Crystal. While not necessarily sci-fi, it's still really interesting to watch Jim Henson work with these creatures.
Yeah. But speaking of sci-fi, but spelling it S-Y-F-Y.
Yes.
I want Jim. To recommend, and I think you'll agree with me, that everyone should check out Jim Henson's Creature Shop Challenge.
Please do. Just based on the first episode, it's so good.
It's just so interesting. If you enjoy Face Off, and you enjoy when they are fabricating something especially, you should check this out. And it really is amazing how in a couple of days these artists are going from, you know, some sheets of foam and some ping pong balls to characters that you believe.
And some of these people already have companies of their own, and they were inspired by the Jim Henson Corporation. Sorry, Jim Henson Company and the Creature Shop and things like that. It's so good to see Brian Henson, who took over his dad's company, step in and kind of view these contestants and how much work they can do in just a couple of days. I think in the first episode, he even says, this is something we have to do in 2 months, and they managed to do it in 2 days. This is some amazing talent. I sincerely, sincerely wish Jim Henson were alive to see how far we've come in technology. And maybe he would see how much it's kind of hindering puppetry in some aspects, and what he would do around that, and how he would combine computer animation along with puppetry.
But he was sort of always on the cutting edge.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Although I'm sure he would still be doing Kermit the Frog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe he wouldn't have done Muppets from Space.
Yeah. Maybe not everything he did was magical, but almost everything he did had a lot of work put into it, and he was so creative. And world building was so important to him.
This really has become the Jim Henson Appreciation Podcast.
Yeah. Look who's hosting this episode. Hello.
Well,
he really did make a huge impact on the entertainment industry that I think not a lot of people really see quite yet. And it makes me sad that a lot of his works in fantasy are more cult hits, and he wasn't able to see the successes that came from that during his own lifetime. He won Hugo Awards for The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, but
what just blows my mind just to even contemplate it is that in his original deal he was working out with Disney right before he passed away, they were going to not only get the Muppets in the deal, but basically Disney was acquiring Jim Henson and mm-hmm. and his creativity. And I just wonder what amazing stuff would have come out of that partnership had mm-hmm. Jim Henson and his creativity had the funds that Disney could offer to make some of these projects.
I totally agree. Jumping off of that, what sci-fi or fantasy projects do you think would benefit from puppetry, whether it be for a television adaptation, a movie adaptation, or Jim Henson once even considered doing a stage show in his lifetime with puppetry? And I think he talked about that shortly before he died.
Well, Disney on Broadway did buy Muppets on Broadway a couple months ago.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
No.
What would benefit from puppetry?
Like, can you think of a specific book adaptation or a comic book adaptation or...
One that has not been made yet.
Yes.
Oh,
maybe something like that.
Changes things.
Yeah.
Actually, I think some of Scalzi's works might, especially Agent to the Stars.
Ooh.
Or actually, even though Old Man's War has some scenes with aliens that are, you know, 2 inches tall, or maybe even giants. So if those were to be adapted...
I would be interested in seeing something like that.
If they continue to adapt some of the Discworld books, too, especially the We Free Men, could certainly be Doozer-esque in their puppetry.
There was a book I actually had to put down because it was sexist, and I think it needs a modern-day rewrite. But if they were able to adapt the script with modern-day audiences in mind, Larry Niven's Ringworld, I think they have non-humanoid aliens in it, one of which is called a puppeteer. And it has, like, 2 heads, and the mouths look like hands, and it has, like, 3 legs. It's so fascinating.
That could be really amazing.
It could be so good, and that could be done with digital puppetry. Oh, I want it so bad.
Also, more Farscape.
More Farscape.
What could benefit from puppetry? More Farscape.
We really need more Farscape. I think Harry Potter could have benefited from more puppetry.
Mm.
Like, didn't they have some in the first movie? In the second one?
I don't know. I basically watched the Harry Potter movies. I did not study them.
That's
Which
fair.
Is not meant to be offensive to anyone who did. But
they're fun. I remember Jim Henson had a deal. Well, not a deal, but someone asked him if he would do The Hobbit. And he was in consideration for a little bit, and then that did not happen. So now that's mostly motion capture.
I thought he decided he wouldn't have been able to adapt it at the scale he wanted to with what he could currently do.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they said in the book. Yes, you're right.
Just glancing over my bookshelves. Christopher Moore doesn't really need any puppetry. It's mostly people.
Right. You know what the world could also benefit from? More Jim Henson storyteller.
Well,
have you seen it?
Yes.
It's so good.
So good.
And there are more folk tales to be told. I would love to see more of that.
I can certainly understand the costs in that, though. If you're building those huge and elaborate puppets for, what, to make half an hour and never using them again?
Well, I would say turn it into, like, a little mini-series for a full hour. I'm just saying, for my benefit.
Oh, okay.
This is strictly for my benefit.
Just do it for Casey.
Just do it for Casey. No one else needs to worry about this.
Nope.
Just me. Into the Woods could have benefited from puppetry. Jim Henson was so close to directing Into the Woods. So close.
Dude, the Muppets Into the Woods rumors were like... sustained my life.
My heart would have been so happy. I don't have enough books on my shelf for sci-fi in general, but it seems like even if those books I had read and they adapted, any alien that appeared in there would have just been turned into a computer-generated creation. And that's sad.
Yeah, the saddest part, I think, is that puppetry tends not even to be a consideration.
Mm-hmm.
So how much is this CGI going to cost us? And practical effects like that have become niche, almost.
Right.
Sort of like hand-drawn animation.
Yeah, I know. There was so much skill in both of those. I wish there were more of it. Maybe one day. Maybe one day they'll turn around and it'll be considered art again. Or unique.
For excuse me, for animation, I think it may have already. Like, it was a big deal when they released Princess and the Frog because it was hand-drawn. And they haven't done it since. But maybe it's something that Disney sort of keeps in their back pocket. If anything starts to slip again, they'll just do something hand-drawn, and it'll bring people to see it.
You know what I think it may also be? I just think the world needs... I'm not saying it needs another Jim Henson, but it seems like with things like puppetry and animation, there was someone who had an idea and they ran with it and they built essentially legends off of themselves. So what probably needs to happen is someone with a fresh idea could basically turn those art forms around and bring a new side of them out that we've never seen before and that we know they're capable of. And I guess that's what I'm hoping for in the future. I guess that's what I take away from this podcast, is that there needs to be that inventiveness and creativity that Jim Henson and Walt Disney and other entertainment forefathers had.
Hear, hear.
Amen.
I don't think I have anything to add to that.
Sounds good. So, I guess we should talk about what we're going to do next time.
What are we going to do next time?
We are going to admit...
what are we going to do next time?
For next month, we are scheduled to confess our geeky and non-geeky guilty pleasures. Now, lots of people would say that they are in the geek closet and that sci-fi and fantasy would be their guilty pleasures. But I think there's more to it than that, especially since the terms geek and nerd are kind of becoming more mainstream now. And yes, you can be a geek and a nerd about anything. You can be a geek and a nerd about theater and whatnot. But, you know, there are still some things that you can watch or read that you kind of don't want your friends to know about. So Sue and I are going to look for some skeletons in the closet. So if you have any geeky or non-geeky guilty pleasures that you would like to admit to us, let us know. Send us an email. Send us an audio comment. If you feel uncomfortable with sharing your identity about those things, you can send it anonymously.
We promise, if you tell us not to say who you are, we won't. We swear.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
Whatever.
Nah. Also, if you want to send us feedback and comments about this episode, please do, because we love Jim Henson.
That's the reason. That's the reason for everything.
That's the reason for everything. I don't see why you're making fun of me for this.
It's funny. All right.
Okay. Say goodbye, Sue.
Goodbye, Sue.
You've been listening to Anomaly Supplement.
That wasn't that funny.
Was it?
Oh, boy.
Okay. I'm Casey.
I'm Sue.
And you have been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
But I'd rather indulge my
even if my I definitely was flailing my arms. Both
that was at Yate. Yeah. Perhaps I do not ditto. Strike you as it's the only way to do it.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z. @gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the @ symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
World is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh,
I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval.
Damn it, Casey, why do you do this to me?
Because I'm an a-hole. That's why.